Thank you so much for joining us in this first season journey. We have two episodes left, and to celebrate the end of season one, we have a special invitation. If you've listened to these amazing guests and wish you could meet them in person, you can. Please join us on August 29th at The Yard. You can RSVP by going on our website and clicking on the Eventbrite, or look up the Activist Hustle Finale Party on Eventbrite. As always, you can find this information on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thanks for joining us.
So when I'm thinking hustle, it's like.
So if I had to word association, activist hustle.
I think activism is just taking a stand.
People of color, minorities, existing as themselves fully and embracing the hell
you
out
don't,
of that.
You hustle to get something that like is not
I'm
on the road.
And not only that, everyone's struggling.
The hustle to me is getting shit done.
Always a light at the end of the tunnel.
I would just say action every day.
You're about to listen to an interview that highlights the dopest of millennial activist projects from across the country to feed the inner activist in all of us. Welcome to The Activist Hustle.
The Activist Hustle is brought to you by Blueprint Leadership.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Lena. How's it going?
It's going great. I feel super energized. I feel so excited about the guests that we have today. I think I might say this every introduction, but this is my favorite episode. Just kidding, I have no favorites.
No favorite episodes. Everyone is equally loved.
Yeah.
But let me just say that our guest today has truly become one of like my favorite people that I've met through this process.
So you do have favorites?
No. But a lot of respect for this
person. Oh my gosh. Okay, so tell us a little bit about who she is.
Okay, well today, our episode features Tatiana Little.
Yeah,
and
Tatiana.
She has a lot of projects, has a lot of passion things that she's been working on, but she's the co-founder of M Vision Productions, and that's a media agency that helps organizations leverage digital storytelling.
Which is so important. Storytelling is so important, and to have an organization like hers that kind of like holds them accountable to have the storytelling be conscious is amazing.
Yeah.
What else does she do?
She's also a public health doctoral candidate.
Stop.
At Harvard.
Oh, okay.
Yep. School of Public Health there. And she's launching an app called Foofy, a digital health startup to connect families to food resources.
So maybe I should have asked, what doesn't she do?
That would honestly be a better
Sleep.
Question. But overall, I think just what's important to highlight about her is that she's driven by not only science, but also storytelling and social justice, and all of these aspects of her life kind of come together to form these really unique and powerful projects.
And she's so passionate.
Mm-hmm.
She's so passionate and so devoted.
Yeah.
I think we just need to jump in and let the people hear her.
Mm-hmm. You will be amazed.
Let's do it. So, Tatiana, thank you so much for being here with us. Like I said, I'm so excited to have you here because we've tried to get you, and you're just such a busy woman out there doing great things in Boston. So, let's start off with you just telling us a little bit about yourself.
I consider myself an artist, and I manifest that through my science, which is looking at health inequities, so why do different groups have different health outcomes and the social factors behind that, and then communicating that and using different media to be able to do that and merging that with social entrepreneurship.
Okay, so that's a lot right there. Let's dissect that a little bit. So how do you do that through media?
In many forms. One thing is looking at how do we communicate what it is that we do. Oftentimes in science, for example, things go into a journal that a few people read, and then what about the rest of the world? Mm-hmm. We deserve to know what's going on. We deserve to know how information impacts our lives. So I try to communicate that in different ways. So making numbers and narratives more digestible, and also through my company, Envision Productions, we often work with a variety of organizations, big and small, and we use the power of media to be able to amplify what they do. And that's something we've termed social impact storytelling.
Social impact storytelling. And what kind of people are interested in this?
We work with a variety of organizations, but they have to do work that is changing the world, and we believe in that work. Let's say that, for example, there's a nonprofit, that needs a pitch video or needs a fundraising video. We did a fundraising video for the St. Baldrick's Foundation, which is the largest private funder of pediatric cancer research. So our video for them was one part of many different efforts that they did to raise over $500,000 for their foundation.
Okay, so you're doing big things out here.
Yeah.
And then talk to me about the health aspect.
Where does the passion for health come from? Growing up low income to immigrant families and not having access to opportunities, I was living out a lot of the factors that make your life unhealthy and that limit your chances for just a good life. And it wasn't until college that I realized that this thing that I was living was called health inequities, and that I, as a person representing that community, both in the lived experience but also studying it at an academic level, I could do something about it. And so I've made it my mission to use my career as a platform, as a pathway, to be able to contribute my skills and hopefully help my community and hopefully widen the paths for other people the way that my path has been widened. So that's one of my life goals.
So let's take it back a little bit. So you said, and it wasn't until education that you realized that you were living out, you know, lack of. What was that? What does that look like?
Many different forms. I was bused out from my community in Dorchester all the way to a suburban school. And I got to see real early that depending on where you live, your neighborhood is better or different, your school is different, the way teachers treat you are different, how you envision yourself as a leader, as a person is different. And so I was I felt a lot of shame for being poor, for being different. And looking back, it was my first insight into inequality, and it just did not make me proud. And it wasn't until I was a college student that I got to critically think about this and name these things as injustices, and that I had a place in changing that, that I think was like a spark that was lit under my ass.
So I think there's so many people that can relate, and so many listeners that are in different positions of the journey that we have on. So can you walk us through your journey of, like, how did you even end up having the access to higher education where you were able to make these reflections?
At many different points, but I will say that the one that sticks out was, I believe it was sophomore year, I was taking a psychology class and doing really, really well, and I had a Latino teacher who was also my advisor, and he saw how well I was doing, and he said, "Tariana, I want you to be part of my research lab." And I'm like, "Research? Like, what is that, you know?" And I said, "You know what, whatever this thing is, I'll try it." And what that involved was going out to East Boston and collaborating with faith-based institutions and building those relationships so that we can have health interventions at the church. So we were able to offer mobile screenings for breast cancer, and I got to work with both the church leaders, but also our project study, and women who are Latina, who are immigrant, who can't speak English, who have limited access to health. And I was able to use my cultural skills, my language skills, my health skills, to be able to be a navigator for them and help them. And I felt so empowered by that, because all the things that growing up in school I felt like were bad things or made me different or inadequate, I can now use this to help other people. It's now an asset. And so from there on, I said, this thing called research and science, I want to be a part of it. If I can contribute myself, I want to do this for the benefit of my community.
Whew, okay, pause. Because I think it's worth noting for the listeners that Every now and then, especially if you're part of groups that are underrepresented or under-resourced, you will feel this shame. Seeing things as lack of or seeing things as being set back, but at the same time, you are the most valuable asset for a research group or for a resource trying to make it into that community.
Absolutely. And the way that I have come to see it, and it might be empowering and insightful for those that feel like they are not enough, is to ask, who benefits from me feeling this way? Who benefits from me being marginalized, from me being silenced? And to not view it as a thing that is like a personal inadequacy, but look at the systems, look at the institutions. Does it promote who you are? If it's led by people who don't have your experience, who don't look like you, who don't seem to care about you, then yes, the result is that you're going to feel inadequate. But until we have some progress in the leadership and the functions that represent us, the institutions that really are for us, about us, with us, that's when we can see progress. That's when we can really see that we are valued. I think that there's a lot of work we have to do to change institutions.
And you're doing some of this work. So you did this research and you were like, wow, research thing. I think I could contribute to this.
So in undergrad, I did like every research training program you can do on campus. and then I followed for a few years a pretty research-based career. And then I said, you know what? This isn't for me. I am more creative. I am more dynamic. I want to be in front of people. I want to co-create. And it was in grad school that I co-founded a media production company. So I went from being exposed to how storytelling can be used as a tool to change people's health behaviors to using those storytelling principles to make a company and be able to use those tools to help organizations.
How did you create this company?
If you ask my co-founder how it started, it's going to be a little bit different. If you ask me, it's going to be a little bit different. So somewhere in the middle is that I'm in grad school, he's an undergrad, that I'm studying, you know, storytelling and being exposed to how storytelling can change human behavior in terms of health. And he's a musician. And he and his band, they are looking for a music video, and they can't afford one. But they can afford a cheap camera, which he buys, and films the video, and he loves it. And he says, Dariana, this is so much fun. I want to do this as a career. And I'm like, honey, wait a minute. Like, we're in school. We're poor. Like, no. Like, so we gave ourselves a challenge that we're going to post free gigs on Craigslist. We have 3 months to make money. If we don't make any money, then this is a hobby. He's like, I'm going to make money. And he did. And it started with a few $100s. And we were really smart about it. We were reinvesting it into the company and buying better equipment. And it wasn't until, I would say, a year or so into that, that I thought, whoa, there is something here. Maybe this is something feasible. This is not just a hobby. This is not a side hustle. This could actually be a company of some sort. And at the time, I didn't really know what I was doing. So I said, okay, let's incorporate this into a business. Let's get a website. Like, let's get a true name. Let's get business cards. And then it wasn't until, I would say, like 3 years ago that we were thinking more critically about what we want to use this for. We don't just want it to be fun and music. We want it to have a mission and a purpose. And we're trying to make a career out of this. So we became more mission-focused. And that's where the social impact storytelling, the seeds of that emerged.
Wow, so this is like passion meets work ethic, meets hustle, meets hobbies, meets talent, meets skills.
And persistence and risk-taking. You don't know where it's going to go. It could completely fail, but in our case, it has not. It's a blessing that we have this opportunity, but it does take time. You have to sort of have faith in something that you can't quite see and you don't know how it's going to end.
So this is, you're embodying the hustles.
Yeah.
So what else were you doing?
It would be hard to make a list, but like it's always school, personal life, things in the community. I love to be able to be a mentor to younger women, especially Latinas, and then my business and little side things.
Where were you going to school during the first years of the
business? Mm-hmm. For me, that part of my life is like a painful part, a painful period. Because it was a time where I realized that spaces that don't value you can really, really break you. And I became deeply unhappy being in an environment that I couldn't really be open about myself, about all of my heritage and background. In some spaces, like I think in science, if you're different, it's viewed as like a bias. And for me, I was someone who was Latina, who was biracial, who was multilingual, who was low-income, first-gen on so many levels. And for me to study the experiences of Latinos and study community-engaged research and health disparities, it's kind of like an other, studying an other, and it makes it seem like what you do is not that important, mm-hmm. or that you are biased in some way. And so for me, I realized, actually, I don't want to be in this space. I want to be in a space that celebrates me, where I can fully be me. I don't want to be boxed in. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I went off and said, you know what? I'm going to pursue more of the communications. I'm going to pursue my own route, this thing called business or entrepreneurship. I don't really know what it is, but it seems like I'm doing it. I'll continue doing more of that.
The notion of having people tell you, especially for people who are in these intersections of their identity and their socioeconomic identity and the racial identity and, you know, whatever they identify as in so many categories, usually get picked up by somebody who's like, hey, you can do this, and follow that without questioning how all of these identities will then conflict with what path
they are following.
You are bringing up so many memories in me. When I was a child, my family underwent a lot of crises, so we interface a lot with social workers. And so growing up, I thought professionally, my career choices were limited to being a teacher, because that's what I saw in school, or being a therapist. So when people tell you, hey, you can be this, like, let's say academic researcher, for me, seeing these badass Latina mentors do it, I'm like, I can do it too. And then you grow up, right? Like, physically, your brain at 25, it changes. It just matures more. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was like, I woke up and I'm like, oh my God. And also being more self-aware. And one thing I can say is that don't focus on the role or the title. Follow what you love to do. I love to create. I love to unite. I love to think. I love to innovate. Mm-hmm. I'm a good people connector. I love languages. Like, focus on those things that you uniquely do, and then find a path that celebrates that, that allows you to give that of yourself. So after this sort of existential crisis of like, I'm not gonna be a scientist, which was the deepest or like the darkest moment in my life, because I had built up this vision and I thought I was like fulfilling the wishes of so many people. And when I wasn't, I felt like a failure. And so I leaned into the Latina mentors, the professors who had built me up, and to this day, I still have close relationships with. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna take a risk and I'm gonna go for a second master's, which is like nuts. I got to be part of the first class ever of this new program at UMass Boston called Transnational Cultural and Community Studies, which is a badass, radical, comparative ethnic studies, social justice driven program that made me feel whole. And it was what I needed at that time, to be taught in a space where it's focused on people of color, for people of color, with people of color, by people of color. It was designed to give you the tools, the vocabulary, the mindset of, I'm working within systems that constrain me and my community, and by design make me feel like I'm an other, or have to choose, or I'm less than. We have the power to change these systems, to dismantle them. We are more powerful than what we think we are. And so for me, that was just so affirming and reinforcing, especially at a time when, at the end of that, when I found out I was going to go to Harvard, I'm like, this is when I need this support right now.
You just did a whole jump. So tell us about the Harvard experience.
So by the time that I was ready to apply, I had aimed to like put forth the strongest case for myself that I could. And I gave myself a challenge. Like, if I get in, great. And if I don't, that's it, Tariana. Like, you're going to go. You are going to pursue the things you're doing now. And the day that I found out that I got accepted, I was in my apartment with my husband and a mutual friend. And he's in community college. He's also from Dorchester. He's an African-American male. And I was helping him with, like, his college, like, planning for his Bunker Hill days. And, like, and then I got the email saying, go check for, you know, the decision. And I'm like, Morven, you're either going to see me cry, right? So it's going to be a huge disappointment, or we're going to make history. And so we opened the email together. And he got to, like, see another Dorchester person of color get this achievement, and I got to share that with him, and it was like such a collective, like it was bigger than me. Like, it could not have come at a more coincidental time. Shout out to Morven if you're hearing this.
Shout out to UMass Boston. Shout out to everybody who has helped Tariana get to where she's at. But when somebody who is in these groups that are underrepresented, under-resourced, gets to break that, you know, whatever wall or whatever space and go in it, it's not just them. They're not alone, and they're doing it for some. And I think the example you just gave speaks to that fully, how important that truly is, right?
Absolutely.
And here you are, getting into Harvard, sharing that moment with somebody, but also becoming that representation for people, you know, for other people.
I don't necessarily want to be the representation, because to me, there's a certain level of, like, tokenism that maybe that's my own definition. I want to be in a space, and I want to be able to create space for other people. I don't want to be representing anyone other than myself. And I have some critiques about the place where I'm at. You know, the fact that I'm in a campus that's located in Boston, at least my campus is in Mission Hill. And I think I'm like the only Bostonian who's on campus. You know, mm-hmm. I understand having a sense of globalness to an institution, but what about the people in our backyard? Yeah. What about the people down the street? Let's look at the disparity between this side of the street and then you just go down one block and there's poverty. So how do we think beyond these walls that are containing so many resources?
Okay, can we just talk about education for a second? What resonated with me when Tariana was talking, about all these programs that remove you from your neighborhood and put, just like, essentially displace you educationally, like being either set aside because you're at risk or set aside because you're gifted, quote unquote, instead of having education that actually caters to people. And then when you actually, God forbid, you do find a practice that you like and then you go into that practice and you're the only one invading that, or like you're the only one present in that space, it's almost harder than if you were in something you didn't like but were one of many.
Yeah. I think for a lot of millennials, you start to shape who you are as a person. You start to like understand your values more in college a lot of the time, or if you're in higher ed and you're exposed to a lot more like organized activism and things like that maybe. And talking about her experience, how it wasn't always good for her, I think it's like unfortunately not a unique or uncommon scenario. Oh, yeah. And if we talk about science specifically or like health and those fields, like there's underrepresented groups for a reason. And it's like this experience Tariana had where she was literally pushed out of it by just not being able to be her true, full, authentic self, going back to our very first episode.
Very first episode.
Tariana's approach was like, I'm going to get out of this. I'm going to go find this other master's program and like find the space that I can be celebrated and like represent myself well. But that's why we see these inequities and these disparities in the science and health fields, is because these like people don't feel welcomed by it.
Yeah. And let alone like this from a very young age, we have it ingrained in us that like those spaces aren't for us anyways. Like when she talked about, you know, her choices were being like a teacher or a therapist. Mm-hmm. And like that was, you know, it. It's like from a very young age, she was taught that. And that's because everything else wasn't accessible. But then as you get older, if you do have that interest or you do have that curiosity to explore it, how many other like obstacles come up that you have to maneuver through? And if you're strong enough and resilient enough and hardworking enough, like literally how many punches do you have to take to actually succeed and be the first one to pave the path?
Right.
And like, I know that, you know, we jumped into talking about how this could be tokenism and how like there is misrepresentation, or how some of this isn't actual people who actually want to do this, that they're just, you know, it's essentially being tokenized. But I do think that it is important for us to acknowledge that representation matters, but start moving forward to intentional representation and not just like, I'm here to represent, but I'm being intentional because I care and I want to pave the path. And I think millennials are the generation that have had so many firsts that they can be like, I just want to see more people like me do this. I just want to be the one that people look up to. And like, that's all fine and good. But we also need to start talking about how hard it is to be in that space, to be the only one in that space, and to be the one that's expected to represent the whole intersectionality of whatever you are. You, I think, are so empowered, so self-aware, and have been really successful in the tasks that you have taken. Not to say that you haven't failed and had your challenges, but I do think that your perspective on this is valuable. And so if we could do like a three bullet point cheat sheet to like help our Gen Zs and our millennial activists out there who are honestly like believing different missions or believing or falling for systems that aren't necessarily being thoughtful, what would those three like bullet points be?
Damn, Lena. I wish I had this in advance. Right, right. So three things. I would say, know that you're enough. So by that, it's knowing that you are beautiful and that you come from a history. You are enough as is. And that dismantles a lot of internalized isms that we may have. And just dispel that. Get that out of you. The other thing is what I mentioned earlier, question who benefits from the situation that I'm in or the situation that we're in? I don't have the answer to that, but it is the thinking, the critical thinking of our spaces, our environments, our systems that I think allow us to see in a deeper and better way how we fit into that and whether or not it serves us. And in the ways that it does and it doesn't. And then the last thing is seek places and people that celebrate you. Seek the people that contribute to your life, that believe in you, that love you, that guide you, that want the best for you, the spaces where you can grow, and that if you think of yourself as like a seed that offers the soil and the water and the sunlight and the care and the love to be able to have you blossom, seek those spaces. And I think at all different levels that I just mentioned, it's a lifelong path that I think allows us to be more whole, to be happier, to be more fulfilled, and hopefully contribute to the world in a way that's authentic and meaningful.
Oh, that's so good. I love the first one. And I also want to note that, like, we know it's not easy.
Yeah.
I know we're sitting here like, just love yourself, duh. We know it's a process, and we know that it's different for everybody, and that some people have way harder issues than others to deal with, and that they're working on them at their own pace. But I think that it is extremely important to know that at the end of the day, like, you are enough and you are beautiful and you have something to contribute. Absolutely. I love that.
Yeah. So I say that because as a biracial Dominican German first gen, I had to undo a lot of the isms that I grew up with that I didn't know were affecting me.
Mm-hmm.
So in my Latino community, in my Dominican community, there's anti-blackness. So me as a light-skinned Latina, I am the whitest in my family, so I'm being surrounded by people who are darker than me, who negate blackness, who critique blackness, who don't see it in themselves, who don't celebrate it,
mm-hmm.
who have to change their hair, change their skin, change their bodies in a way that distances us from our heritage, what we should be, and makes us into a white standard of beauty. And that's something I personally had to work hard to undo, to love my curls, to love my curves, to love the accent that comes out, to love the accent in my family's voices, to really be proud of that. And that's why I say you are enough.
Oh yeah.
Because you have to start with like a strong self. And that means, in what ways am I hurting myself as well?
Mine was like a very subtle, like just constant pats on the back and positive reinforcement for my assimilation into American culture.
Speak it out.
Yeah, things like my accent. Like every time, you know, somebody was like, oh, you're from Colombia, but you don't have an accent. I'm like, yeah, I know. Like, you know, and it wasn't until I grew up and like backpacked and went back to Colombia. And I go back to Colombia every year that I truly reconnected with my roots on my own.
Right.
And under nobody else's terms but my own.
Right.
And then began seeing it with the lenses that I was like carving out for myself, as opposed to like being handed by others.
Beautiful.
Which is just so, it's so transformational, but it's so necessary. And again, like our journeys were very different, but essentially got us to the same place of just acceptance of self and love of self.
Yes. And for me, after I graduated high school, I had the chance to go to Germany. I lived there for 6 months. And I was just an American girl. So I kind of got a different way of being from that I had never had before because of that context. And then when I came back, I was, like, had no real job, right? Had no real prospects of my life. And my best friend at the time, who was black and went to Mexico with me, she's like, Dariana, you need to get your ass to college. She said, get your ass to college. Let's go to Roxbury Community College. They all they need is $10 and your high school diploma. And I'm like, have that, right? Have my $10, have my diploma. So I go in and I enroll and I never look back. And I went from being in a white majority environment to being in an environment where it's mainly people of color, and it was so affirming. And it really shook me because I had to confront all of my internalized racism that I had towards my own community.
Yes.
And so it wasn't that we are not smart. It's just that we're not given the opportunities to exercise our incredible intelligence and talent.
Oh. Yes! When I became a freshman in college, I had to get two jobs because my mom lost hers. So I picked up a second job. You know what it was? A housekeeper at a hotel. Working, you know, being there at like 7 a.m. to clean up these people's rooms. And like, this is like the Marriott, like the business Marriott. So people are there for like conferences. And it's such a shock every time that I go to a conference now. And I'm like, oh, I'm at a hotel at a conference that I used to housekeep for.
And the thing is, like, you're the same person. And the difference between you being a cleaner and you being an attendee at a conference is opportunity, because you're just as brilliant. You're just as full of talent, right? Mm-hmm. Why these barriers, right? Mm-hmm. Why is it so hard?
It's opportunity, but it's also the second point, the second bullet point that you gave us, which is the questioning. My main point to our listeners is, I want them to do your second bullet extra. Like, I want them to do it to an extreme, because sometimes I'll find myself thinking like, oh, am I just being like really picky now? Am I just like, you know, everything that I see or every movie that I watch, or I was supposed to watch.
You're not.
Yeah,
you're not. You're
exactly.
Just being
a cycle. It's like, you're not, and yeah. Go further and go further and dig deeper. And when you start saying like, oh no, that can't be, go even further into that one. Right. Because I think that while a lot of us question things, we don't really question them to the depths that they need to be questioned. Like, anywhere that you're putting your money or your time into, question it fully and see if it aligns.
Absolutely. And for me, it's as small as, what's the language being used? What are the colors that are around me, right? What does the artwork look like or not look like? Mm-hmm. Who's in this space? Who's guarding it? Right?
Yes.
Who's in the leadership position? Who's saying what? What's not being said?
I love that you're saying this, because one of the most recent concepts that I've started to dismantle within myself and started to like kind of struggle with is being a working professional. There was this training we did last year about white supremacy and how white supremacy has like embedded its roots into so many different cultural things of our world, one of them being the professional world.
Yes.
And how anything but white and minimalist and speaking like this is not considered professional. And one of the things that triggered it was the show Insecure. Do you watch the show Insecure?
I watched some episodes of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there's this episode where like this girl, Molly, she's a lawyer. She's like, I can hang with my friends and I can hang with the lawyers. And she does the code switching thing really great. But it really, and then somebody else comes into the office who isn't code switching, who is fully herself.
Yep.
And she's like, laughing wicked hard,
and
she's
trying
like,
to get the job.
Yes,
and the people are like, she doesn't quite fit in with the culture.
Exactly,
here.
And
then she
like,
has to deliver the news to her that she didn't get.
Yes,
hired. Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen this episode, pause right now, go watch it, come back. But essentially, it's that. It's the whole. Well, when did the notion of professionalism, you know, how did this even happen? How is it that we're saying that professionalism is to say, oh, hello, good morning, and we are constantly learning how to maneuver different spaces.
Yes.
But when we don't maneuver the space to the what is deemed professional or perfected, which is rooted in white supremacy.
Absolutely.
Then we get told that that's not how it should be.
Just recently, I was, this weekend, I was in Swampscott with my husband. We were just enjoying, you know, we were looking at houses. So we were like, we're not going to go to this fancy seafood place. We're going to go to a Vietnamese joint because we love Vietnamese food, being from Dorchester. So I'm ordering my, you know, I'm eating my foot. And there's two white ladies behind me just talking about the most idiotic, simplistic things about what they're having for dinner, and their kids are in summer camp. And I'm slurping the soup and just like eating it. And he's like, Dariana, like slow down, like don't be so loud. Like, can you not sip the soup like that? And I'm like, this is how the soup is supposed to be slurped. Like, this is how you eat the soup.
Yep.
He's like, calm down,
yeah.
You know? And I'm like, no, like, I'm enjoying the soup. Like, I'm paying way more than what they would charge me in Dorchester here in the Swampscott Vietnamese restaurant. I am going to eat my soup the way that it's meant to be eaten. And so I go to the bathroom before I leave, and I come back, and these women are just, like, looking at me as if I'm, I don't know, an alien,
yeah.
Right? Not a word was said between those ladies and me, but there was a lot that was said in the silence and the look. And so my husband and I talked about it yesterday, and he's like, yeah, I thought about it, like, you know, maybe you shouldn't have eaten like that. And I'm like, honey, no, I paid for that soup. They didn't pay for it. They're not going to dictate how I'm going to enjoy my meal. And those are the ways in which microaggressions, in which racism, in which white supremacy takes
yes.
over, where even in a space where the most organic and natural thing is to slurp your soup because that is how it's regularly eaten,
mm-hmm.
because it's in a space where it's mostly white.
It
And that's viewed as weird.
It's about, no, I pay to be here, and I also have control of my space.
Exactly.
And in my space, I will slurp this soup if I feel like it. And these white ladies will suck it up.
Yeah.
Like, because at the end of the day, our hope is for all of us to be able to be in that space, but having it be a more authentic space where people can really be themselves. Other people are made to question their behavior.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, even though it's not the what they've been taught is right. Like, that's what they've been taught their whole lives. So, for the third bullet point, you talked about seeking spaces that celebrate you. I also want to add to that, seek people who will keep it real with you. I grew up with, like, love and, like, my dad, oh my God, he loved me so much. But he also checked me. And I think that that was so important for me, for people to keep it real with me. You know, and you said that you did that for yourself, right? Like, you had to go through it to be like, wait, this isn't what I want. But sometimes we can have somebody that does that for us very early on.
Absolutely. I had one experience a few years ago where a woman who was in a position as my supervisor, she said to me, you are not that important. And it kind of hurt me a little bit. I'm like, what do you mean I'm not that important? But I thought about it, and what she was saying was, you don't have to be everywhere. You don't have to do everything. You don't have to be everything to everyone. You are not a necessity. You are spreading yourself too thin. You need to prioritize and choose and do the things that are required. And I think in those simple words, you are not that important, it opens up for you to see, where am I truly important, right? What are the spaces where I do need to be at with the people that I do need to be with?
Mm-hmm.
And if that doesn't align, if it doesn't help me, if it doesn't serve me, it is extra. And so to me, it was a gift. She was giving me a hard truth in a way that I received it openly, and I really embraced it. And
yeah.
I now see it as a very wise framework. It's like a filter.
Yes. So we said a lot today.
Yes,
but I do want to just get to one more. I want to cover Foofy. Give us the elevator pitch, which I'm sure you're giving a million times. What is Foofy?
It's still in development, the pitch and the actual product. But Foofy is a digital health startup idea that's supposed to make it easier for people who need food resources, who are food insecure, to be able to find the resources that they need. So the idea is that there's this app that medical providers or social service providers can use to quickly screen people who are food insecure, map out resources for them, and then refer them to the services that they need.
So, talk to us a little bit more about food insecurity. What exactly is that?
Food insecurity is a hidden health issue. So, 1 in 8 people in the U.S. and 1 in 10 people in Massachusetts are food insecure, meaning they don't know when their next meal, like, where it's coming from. And it typically is associated with low income. So, if you are not making enough money or you have unstable life conditions, you're not going to have regular access to food in order to live and function healthily. And it's an issue that increases your risk for diabetes, for depression, for anxiety, for hypertension. So it's linked to so many other health issues. And when you don't really uncover it, when you don't look into it, you just think it's these issues. But actually, it could be a lack of regular access to food.
So I'm going to take a moment to just dissect that a little bit. Because I think there's a lot of people out there who don't even realize that this is a thing,
right,
first of all.
Yeah.
But I also feel like there's a lot of people out there experiencing this, not being able to pinpoint that. So how did you even come up with this?
Growing up, my mother, she had very creative ways of managing the food in the household. So yes, we went out shopping, but it was always with coupons. And we got food at the colmado down the store, the bodega down the store. But she had an arrangement with a grocer where we would buy food and he would tally it up and we would pay later. So he would get paid when we got paid. And it was a very generous thing for him to do, and it involved a lot of trust. And that was one of many ways that mommy creatively made sure that her kids had enough food to eat. And it wasn't until grad school when I was looking at food insecurity among Dominicans and Lorans, who are low income, who are immigrant, and who only speak Spanish, that I realized, oh my God, holy shit, this is what my family went through. There's this thing called food insecurity. That was us. That was what we experienced. And it's linked to poverty. And it makes so many of the things in our lives harder because we don't have this basic need met. And so it just became more real for me. It wasn't this thing I was studying. It was an experience that my family had gone through that a lot of people in our community are going through. And I said, hey, what can I do to be able to alleviate this burden, this issue? So Foofy is one way. I don't know how it'll go or where it'll go, but it's a risk that I'm willing to take.
And so what have been the first steps of this startup idea coming to fruition?
It has been interviewing people who have been or are food insecure, the people who serve them, whether they're medical providers or social service providers, looking at organizations, interviewing them, looking at what are the issues, what are the gaps, how can Foofy help in some way in this very complex and monstrous system. What can Foofy do to be able to help people? And then being part of different programs and competitions and just kind of trying to test it out in front of critics.
When did you start this?
As an idea, I would say like 2015 or something.
Okay. 2016. So from then until now, how many times have you said, I'm not doing this anymore?
Well, after I came up with it in a class and you know, took it to a competition and won, I left it as an idea because I was like, what is this? Like, I can't. Now, like a technology company, like an app, like that's not my background. Like I don't know how to do this. Like just an idea, and I shelved it for like a year. And it wasn't until I met with the program director in my program at Harvard, and he's like, "Oh, this Foofy thing. Like you should like maybe pursue that." And it was his words. Like I'm a type of person that if you drop some gems on me, it could be like four or five words, but the sentence has to be right. It will open my eyes, and I was just like. Pursue the shit out of that idea. So he said, you should pursue it. And I'm like, okay, cool. So for me, I was like, I want to workshop it in your class. I want to enter this incubation program at Harvard. I'm going to like enter it in competitions. I'm going to pursue this thing and see where it goes. And so part of that is like constantly confronting my fear, constantly telling myself, you can do this. You've already started a business. It's been successful. You can do it again in a completely different sector. In this experience that you have not had before because it's a very different type of industry and company, you can do this. So every day, it's like me looking in the mirror, having to confront my biggest fears, which is fear of failing or not being good enough or like this shit just like falling flat on my face, you know? So that's part of entrepreneurship.
Yes, it's part of entrepreneurship, but it's also part of activism.
Yeah.
Waking up every day and looking at yourself and being like, you got this, right? Like, you got this. Like, I know nothing about apps, but you're going to create this damn app and it's going to be amazing, right? Or I was successful with one of my projects and now I'm adding a second one and all the things that come with thinking about that in itself, you know, having an extra or having additional work and you're already doing so much. I think it's really important to like know that this is an everyday process. There is no... I think the way I worded the question was to talk us through the path, and it's like, the path is never ending. The path is every day. The path
yes.
is saying every day, like waking up with the mindset of what is it that is your mantra? And what is it that is your mantra?
My mantra is intentional creativity for social change. And that is how I merge my science, my storytelling, and my social justice, and all the work that I do.
Oh, I love that. I think it encompasses you fully. I mean, I really do. I mean, you already know I admire you so much and I admire all of the work that you do, but I really appreciate that we've highlighted two of your projects here as well as your experience. So how can we, the listeners, the podcast, support you in your endeavors? What's next for Foofy or for the media production or for you as a person?
If any of this resonates with you and you have any questions or inquiries or curiosities, feel free to share them with me. On Instagram and Twitter, I'm at TV Lenses, TV like television, lenses like your outlook on life. Feel free to connect with me. I'm easily accessible and I love to share whatever wisdom I have and learn about other people.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
I appreciate y'all.
One thing that I love, love, love is how much she emphasized like self-love. Back to episode one with Angelica, it's like, you know, she said activism is bringing herself fully, but every day that I think about it, I'm like, yes, it is. Yes, it is bringing myself fully. And even thinking beyond that lately, I've been thinking about how can I be more myself? Like, how can I be more authentic to myself and my roots and my culture and who I really am inside and in touch with that? Mm-hmm. Because I think so many of us are so far removed from that, from like our history and like our core.
And the only way that you can kind of get there, I think, is another thing that she mentioned about like being introspective. Like you can't fully find your self-love until you fully understand yourself. So how are you going to bring out your more authentic self? You can't actively do that until you look inside and be like, this is who I am, and this is what I have to offer, yes. And this is what I'm going to actively bring to the table. Mm-hmm. And if I do that and I can speak like Tatiana speaks and express myself the way that she does, like, I'm doing it.
And she's able to present it in a way that's not judgy. Like, mm-hmm. Oh no, you're wrong. Here's my opinion. But it's more like, I hear you. Mm-hmm. I acknowledge you. And here's where I'm coming from, which is so, so different. When you're able to give love without expectation, that's like the realism, the most pure form of love. And it's the same for activism. I think another really great thing that I want to talk about is Tatiana's advice of question everything. Mm-hmm. And I know that we live in a time where it's like, oh my God, am I questioning everything and just being like super pessimistic? And like, am I the person that doesn't get invited places? Like, because I'm like, you know.
No fun to be around.
No fun to be around. Seriously. Like, and like, it's so true, because it's like the moment that you have an awakening, the moment that you have education, the moment that you know that these systems and institutions are in place to like hold you back and not allow you to be the most successful self that you can be, then you do start questioning everything. And I love that Tatiana said that, when even when it seems like things are progressing, even when it seems like a bill is getting passed, like, who is that benefiting? Yeah. Why are you being invited? Who, like, honestly, who is it benefiting in the whole, like, yeah, as a whole?
I think, like, every time I walk into a space now, my goal is to ask that. Like, who's benefiting from this situation? It's like, it totally shifts your perspective as long as you ask it when you're keeping an open mind.
Don't ask it to judge. Don't ask it to be like, who's this benefiting? Oh, you suck. Like, that's not the purpose. It's, who is this benefiting? Because can we be more intentional? And because I genuinely and lovingly want to challenge you to be better and contribute better to our world. Mm-hmm. I also really like the other thing that she talked about is having people that support you. Mm-hmm. And when I added like having people that challenge you, I think that that is so important. And again, if you are at peace with yourself and you know, like, you've been introspective and you're self-aware and you're confident, I think that anybody who supports you or challenges you can only make you a better person. Because it doesn't become about the interaction. It doesn't become about them. It becomes about, how can I take this interaction with anybody that's supporting or challenging me and make myself better, especially as an activist. So let's summarize her points.
Just remember everything that Tatiana has taught you. Number one, you are enough. Number two, question everything, every single thing. And number three, find those spaces and those people that celebrate you and challenge you, and you'll be good.
I hope you're all writing this down, and I hope that you listen to the episode again, honestly, because this one's big. I feel like it's going to take a couple listens to really get everything. But thank you all for, honestly, I think this might be like a first time that I'm like this vulnerable, but I do want to thank every single listener that hears our stories and takes anything that we say and applies it to their lives, because we are trying to build a community here where we support you as we support ourselves. So thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting us. Please, please, please subscribe. Please help us highlight these amazing people that we've been interviewing. And we look forward to the next episode 2 weeks from today.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
And we're going to take a moment to thank everybody who made this podcast possible, starting with you, the listener. Without you, there would be no us. I'd also like to thank the Activist Hustle team, starting with Rachel Sullivan, your producer and director, Aaron Taylor, our producer and editor, Brandon Rush, our creator, Amina Chandani for your creative logos and constant creative input, The Yard for lending us your space to record, and a final shout out to Blueprint Leadership. If this episode has at all inspired you to take action, remember, we have support for you. Blueprint is a leadership program made by young activists for young activists. Check out blueprintldc.com/services and see how we can support you on your activist hustle.